Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Be the Vessel podcast. My name is Daniel, and I play the roles of channeler and intuitive psychologist, aiming to bridge all aspects of the healing arts while navigating my return journey to the stars. I interview those journeying through all aspects of healing, whether that be from more traditional Western frames or from a more spiritual or spirit-based connection. What I always find is that everyone is a bridge between worlds, a universe unto themselves, and a unique light that shines brightly for the collective. If you like what you hear and are interested in more of my offerings, consider joining the Be the Vessel community at patreon.com/DrDanielAtkins, where you will find various unique offerings, bonus content, and podcasts such as my own channeled information and the new Be the Vessel healing series. May you find what you're looking for and remember the light within. Dr. Ashley Houchin is a licensed clinical psychologist. She is the owner of a small group therapy practice called Lotus Bloom Psychology, located in Naperville, Illinois. Dr. Ashley, as she is known, has an affinity for working with neurodivergent individuals and specializes in supporting those diagnosed with ADHD. She is a Jill of all trades, seeing clients, conducting evaluations, supervising staff, operating the business side of her practice, and least of all, posting on social media. She comes from a lineage full of teachers and continues to find herself drawn to supervising and mentoring. I first met Ashley during the last stage of my clinical training, and she acted as my diagnostic supervisor, aka testing, which you will soon learn was not my favorite thing and elicited quite a bit of anxiety to engage with for several reasons. But Dr. Ashley stood out as a calm, compassionate, and open-minded supervisor, there to guide me through it and entertain all of my wild ideas along the way, which have only grown wilder with time. I so appreciate Ashley for coming on the podcast to discuss the various roles we played on our intertwined journeys into freedom and power. You can discover more about Ashley online at lotusbloompsychology.com or on Instagram at cupofadhd. Please enjoy this episode with Dr. Ashley Houchin, and may it be an invitation, a gift, and a medicine to learn from the systems you engage with and support the stepping stones to your own greatest freedom. Hi, Ashley. Thanks so much for being here and welcome to the show.
Hey, Dan. Thanks for having me. I'm delighted.
So as I was literally just saying to you, I'm really excited for this opportunity because I've often had a vision of having people in my life who have served an important role in different roles, different kinds of relational dynamics on at this point in my life and in your life or their life, and just to be able to explore and reflect a bit on that time on our lives, in our lives, and the time now, and just to get a new perspective, maybe a deeper or an expanded perspective on those dynamics and how they continue to unfold in each of us. And as listeners will know, because I'll write about it in the show notes, but you were one of my supervisors during sort of the last stage of my clinical training. Mm-hmm. And it was an important time. I mean, all those years were an important time, but that stage was sort of, it was fertile, a fertile ground for all of the growth and expansion and transformation that was to come, that looked very different than what I knew of at the time. And your life was changing a lot too. There was a lot going on there for you too. So yeah, so I'm excited. And thank you for being here.
Absolutely. Yeah. I am eager to see how it unfolds.
Me too. So where I'll start, really, you know, one of the topics we're definitely going to get into and what I reached out to you about was supervision, because you were a supervisor of mine. But where I want to start actually is with your current practice with Lotus Bloom Psychology, because it's so cool. And I what I really want to say is that I'm just so happy for you, because I go on your website and I just like, I see you and I feel like, oh my God, Ashley's doing like exactly what she's meant to be doing. And I just feel like you're stepping into your power, and I feel that. And correct me if I'm wrong, but there seem to be a lot more faces on that screen than the last time I checked. And so also just congratulations for all of that. And now circling back, like I recognize what you had said to me, which is that you were doing supervision now. So it makes sense that your practice is growing and you're supervising some of these, I don't know if they're trainees or you know, full clinicians or whatever, but that's amazing. And so really the first question would just be, what has that growth process been like for you? And how's it going?
Yeah. It's good timing to be reflecting on that question. It has been wonderful and just so joyous to find other humans in the world that I connect with, and who I feel I can help in the, in their development, and help guide them and lead them and teach them. But we already have some kind of symbiosis. We already have some kind of vibe or connection that feels just really genuine and honest. And it's just so lovely to sit with these women in my practice. And
there's a lot of divine feminine energy.
Yes. I feel. Yes. Yes, I feel that too. So it's been wonderful. There have also been challenges, like any growth process, I think there have been challenges. And I have expanded myself, I think, intellectually in my understanding of how to operate a business. I've been challenged to identify really clearly where my values are and my goals and my plans. So I can communicate that with these people who are contemplating if they want to join me in that process. There's a lot of logistics that take up a lot of time when you run a business. So
I can only imagine. And yeah, it elicits this theme in me around when we were together at the clinic we were at, you were still answering to other people. You were still playing. You were still navigating your own role, which, I'll be curious about when we get into it about, how you navigate, finding your own role in a place and then having responsibility for this other person. But now as you get free, freedom is a really big value of mine, maybe the biggest. But freedom doesn't come easy. Freedom takes courage. Freedom often involves working through all the fears that kept you limited and assigned to different systems that, helped us feel safe for whatever they offered, all the way back to family. So with that freedom, I imagine that's empowering, but I imagine it comes with okay, who am I? What is the culture of this place? What am I creating here? This is your brainchild, your system.
Mm-hmm.
And so I imagine that, challenges you in different ways, brings up different feelings. And rather than just ask a broad question around that, I'll narrow it down a little bit into your supervisory role and how you feel your perspective as a supervisor has changed at all, if at all, or evolved as you sort of stepped more into this powerful role.
Yeah, I think operating within a system, I had the challenge of toggling between, what people in authority over me were looking for, or what I thought they were looking for, or what I hoped they were looking for. And then what felt right or genuine or practical to me. And so I think the evolution in developing my own practice and kind of facing some of those questions and challenges about what do I want this to look like? How do I want it to feel?
Yeah.
How do I want people to feel when they talk with me, when they represent this group, when they show up in spaces, I want to know how they feel. And so I think I was challenged at the clinic we were at to kind of wrestle with some things that maybe made me feel contained in some way, or like I couldn't make decisions of that sort of aligned with my own way of practicing, my own way of thinking that felt good to me. And that's not to say that anything that was done there was bad. I don't believe that's true, but I think there were good intentions, and that was just a different way of operating and being free to create my own system and my own way of of practicing, I think, has been challenging, but in a really like growth promoting way that has felt really good. There's this kind of balance in my brain between like what I want for the people I supervise, what I want them to feel, what I want them to experience, and probably like what is real for them. I think there's lots of perspectives that are true for each of us. I don't think any, like I'm have the right perspective, you know, their experience I think is true for them. Right. So I think I'm trying to, this is an evolving process for me because it's all kind of new and I'm trying to check in with people. I'm trying to have honest, authentic conversations. I'm trying to be really clear about what I'm thinking. Because I think in my own experience of being supervised, I felt like I was trying to please and guess a lot at what my supervisors wanted from me or needed from me. And that didn't feel good. It was very anxiety provoking. So I'm trying to lower the anxiety. Like, that's my goal.
Yeah, that's a good goal. That's a good goal. Oh, training is such an anxiety inducing and provoking experience. And I credit some of older psychoanalytic frames of doing things for a little bit of that in terms of like, let's present a blank slate and we'll just talk about them behind their backs and conceptualize them and analyze them and grade them. But then when we show up, we'll just be very tight-lipped and like, let's see what they do with this anxiety. And I experienced quite a bit of that. What I really loved is how you said, you know, when you consider what this is and you know, what you want it to be and what it's going to be, you focus on how you want it to feel because, you know, in some of the brand of spirituality that I live by, I guess you could say, the word manifestation comes up a lot. And some people, you know, really focus on like, okay, how can I manifest all the details of my life? Like how I want it to look and all the things in it. But really, my personal truth is the universe responds to how we want it to feel. Because feelings, emotions, are way more powerful than the meticulous details of like, well, I want the wallpaper to be this color. It's like, but what if that's not in highest alignment? You know, but the way we can be most aligned is how we want to feel, because how we want to feel is going to transcend the details. Like if the wall's meant to be orange or pink, it will be whatever color aligns with the feeling. And then we can trust like, well, I want it to feel blissful. I want it to feel exciting. I want it to feel whatever. And that's a good, it's really the best, as far as I know, the best compass or the best level of discernment or navigation tool we have, rather than letting the mind anxiously try to predict all the different colors and nuances. And the other thing that strikes me is we get encouraged and empowered and humbled by stepping into our own power. Because when we step into our own power, we realize, oh, this is my vision now, but it's not necessarily going to be everyone else's vision. And they're going to come into my vision, into my baby, and they're not just going to like fold into place. I don't even necessarily want them to do that. So that game of like transparency, of being the leader, of learning how to be your kind of leader. Mm-hmm. And what that looks like and what that means to you. Because we all have the capacity for leadership, but it looks different on each of us. Mm-hmm. I honor you in that. And I'm sure it brings up a whole new landscape for you to play with and scare yourself in when you open one door and see what's there. But that's the limitless experience, right? Like the container of the system. And this is how I always came to see it, reflecting back on my experiences. It was easy for me to have a system that I could resist and push against and blame, mm-hmm. you know? It's like I would blame my family of origin or the various systems I participated in because I was different, because I felt different, and because I didn't have the tools to own my power. But at some point, you know, you can keep blaming the system and staying in it, but they're not really going to know how to help you, even if they want to. Mm-hmm. And then we step outside and we're like, oh, okay, it's just me now. Where are the walls and what do I mm-hmm. want it to look like? Now, this question whatever comes to mind. It can be about you. It can be about me, and feel free, because I would say at this time I have a fairly deep awareness of my personality and what I was like as a trainee. But what do you recall of that time? If anything, it could be blank for you. But what do you recall of that time of our relationship, and just anything that was unfolding for you that feels poignant now?
So I think when I picture you, and sometimes when I think of you, like when you come to mind, I picture you sitting on the couch in my office.
Yeah.
We had giant windows to one side, which let in some beautiful natural light, and some sort of pale blue walls, and this like kind of brown leather couch, and that seats too, and you were in the middle of it, and I remember you seeming nervous a bit, but also trying to like find some confidence, I think.
Yeah.
And really thinking so deeply. I think one of the things that stands out about our time together was just the depth that you were trying to get into, and seeking that alongside having to navigate some real practicalities of like showing up and doing the work, right, that needs to get done. So yeah, I picture your smile, a big smile on your face. And even though, you know, there were nerves there, yeah, I experienced so much joy that comes from just sitting with you both then and now.
Thank you for saying all of that. And yeah, all of those things. I had so much fear. But it's, you know, what's interesting is it's, you know, when we live with I guess we could say like a chronic state of anxiety, you're not always even conscious of how much you're carrying and how much other people can just feel it. And seeing the ways that I've continued to grow and change, I can just see, wow, my entire life was driven by fear. And you know, particularly in supervisory spaces, even if the clinician or the supervisor was a great fit for me, you know, was aligned and was open, because openness was probably the biggest thing I could ever ask for, because I like, there was something inside me that had to push. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, you're either going to be okay with this or you're not, but mm-hmm. I have to get this stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
But there was so much anxiety about being good enough, so much. So so for me, there was this deep conflict and like this like raging power that like I needed places to like vent a little bit about the systems I was participating in. And then all the fear around, oh my God, I hope this is okay. Like and to be perfectly honest with you, without dovetailing too much, the year prior was probably the most challenging year of my doctorate training career. I had pretty poor evaluations, frankly, because I was pushing really. I was at a college counseling center, and this is going to use a little bit of astrology, but I was the same age as you had so many supervisors at the place I will not name that I was at. And, but my primary one was the same age of me, and we were both going through this very potent astrological period called the Saturn return, which is, it's just, you know, it tends to be from around 20 to 30, around that period. And, yeah, I was clearly being so challenged in my own ego and what I thought was right. And there were a lot of ways that like college counseling does things in particular that I was just like, this is just not for me. It's just so clear. This is so clear. And I, did not always handle it the right way. I'm not sure they did either, but I could totally own that about myself. And so probably even coming off of that, stepping into new supervisor relationships, I was like, okay, here we go again. And I also have deep empathy for you having to be the testing supervisor for me.
I was just thinking that. Yeah, I was like, and to give context, like we were trying to give people diagnoses, and knowing where you are now, you know, we were grappling with that then, you know?
Yeah, it was, you know, the listeners of this will not be surprised, but in the area of diagnostic evaluation or neuropsychological evaluation, or as I would just refer to it, testing, this was an area of psychological training that I just couldn't really get behind. It wasn't, and this is just where I am on the spectrum. Like, you know, I always thought you had such a beautiful perspective and could come to it with this. With this light, I think I had a heaviness about me in general, I think, because, and you know, a lot of people like you just said would credit the depth of my thinking. But, and while there was a lot of goodness there, I think, from my experience now, the weight of my thinking was very painful to be that much in my head and not so much in my heart where I really needed to be. It was so challenging. There were no answers there. I'm sure you can remember just the steam I was blowing off. Like, well, what about this? What do I, you know, and when I would conceptualize, you know, in some of those presentations or together, like, I don't think I would breathe because I'd be talking for so much and like, oh, beautiful conceptualizations. I don't know what this is for, if it's for me, if it's for them, which is probably part of the feelings I had about testing was there was so much, and there was so much richness that would go into those lengthy reports. And then to come to these labels, you know, it's just not my, it's not my forte. It's not my, frankly, because even as I was doing the testing, I knew that I qualified for half of those labels myself. And I was like, this doesn't make me feel good about myself.
Yeah. Like,
So there was a lot of that. So I honor you for being there with me. I know we talked a lot about ADHD.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess to formulate a question around that, I'm curious if you recall how you were feeling about testing then, and if working with me changed or confirmed any of your feelings about testing, and how you, and I know you work with it now, and if it's evolved at all, and in what way?
Yeah, I specifically remember you disclosing at some point toward the end of your training year that you didn't really believe in labels or diagnoses. And I remember kind of like it being like a little bit of a shock to my system in some ways.
Like, is this guy, can this guy be doing this? I don't know.
I was like, okay, I hear you. Yeah. But I think maybe what, you know, gave you a little bit of freedom in that space allowed you to come forth and disclose that to me. And for me personally, it did stretch my thinking, right? I personally have grappled with like, what is ADHD, for example? Like, I don't feel like I ever, but even with all the studying and all the information that I have about it and the fact that I specialize in it, right? I tell people this is my area of expertise and I am passionate about it. I still don't feel like I can hold it in my hand. Like, I don't feel like I have a grip on like what really is going on. And I know if I talked with Russell Barkley or, you know, any other person,
some ADHD experts,
yes, in the community, they would say, I have an answer for you.
Yeah, that's what they do.
Yeah. And I hear them. I hear their explanation. But it just still feels really hard. I guess I question my own understanding of it. And it feels hard for me to sort of identify, you know, what this is in other people. And I take it pretty seriously. You know, if someone gets a diagnosis like that, it can impact the trajectory of their life. And so, so I think I grapple with it still myself. I think I was grappling with it already and still trying to wrap my head around some of the diagnoses that we discussed and we encountered in the process that we engaged in your supervision. And I think I still grapple with like, what is this? And what does it mean to other people and to me? And how do we operate with this label or without it? So yeah, I'm not sure what people will think of me saying that, but that's kind of, every case that comes to the door, I think what's changed is that I'm not so tied to the medical model. I'm not so tied to the medical definition of like what a diagnosis is. I freed myself up a little bit to be able to say, I think you have like mild ADHD, or this is the way that, you know, the things that we've discovered in your testing, how they show up and kind of what they look like for you. And we're going to call that something. And the label we've chosen is this one. So I think I freed myself up to have a little more room around how I interact with that label and how I describe it to people and help them to understand, you know, the label and how they might use it in their life for good.
Well, thank you for sharing so honestly. And let me, if I can, free you from your own anxieties about what people might think, because you're talking to a guy who claims to talk to aliens. So it's, yeah. You know, it's pretty, there are layers to this game. And the people who listen to this podcast are be like, yeah, obviously. So let me say, firstly, in regard to my brazenness, as I was expanding upon trying to get free to the best of my ability earlier in my life, I believe in labels. I mean, I know they exist. It is more so framing them appropriately for their utility in my mind and how complete they truly can be.
Right.
Because someone like Russell, who you mentioned, who might proclaim to have a complete understanding of what this man-made label is, consisting of words that we use to describe the human experience, there is a brazenness there that I sense misses the invitation to recognize that we don't know exactly who or what we are.
Right.
So if you acknowledge that foundational idea, mm-hmm. then it's interesting to come up with labels that we think will concretely and completely define our experience, which correlates with things we see light up in the brain and all these things that are useful or can be, mm-hmm. can be invitations, can also be forms of imprisonment. But I see very clearly where I am on the spectrum of how I relate to these terms. And I'll also say that when I left the clinic and was sort of leaving basically the field of Western psychology as I knew it, or rightfully finding its place in my life and finding my relationship to it, you know, there was a time where I was like, no labels, nothing. But, you know, what happens is the brain, you know, likes to make meaning, the ego likes to have things to hold on to. So, you know, it's going to get filled up with something unless I've reached this level of consciousness where I don't need to make meaning out of any of my circumstances, you know, but at that point, you're not really engaging with a personality in the world. And so to do that, you know, there's other information that's going to come in. Now, this is a different sort of information that started to come in, but there's still words and labels that I use to talk about my experience. They're not of the DSM nature. But there are other kinds of labels and categories that that we are no more immune from being imprisoned by. Mm-hmm. You know, there's lots of spiritual modalities like astrology and human design and other kinds of, because we desperately want to know who we are.
Right.
So my thing was, this isn't doing a good enough job, you know, referring to the DSM. But then it's like, okay, but is there anything that's going to do a better job? And like, you know, I'm a seeker, so I look far and wide and I have experienced far and wide. And I do, and I pick a little bit from different things. I like things I refer to as energy medicine and the chakras, and I do like astrology, and I like human design, and I just like listening to my own higher guidance and understanding, you know, how that might sort of move me to a place of understanding. But I think most powerfully, we are invited to give up any sense that we're going to completely grasp it. That I think that's probably my biggest thing, regardless of the frame, regardless of DSM, regardless of any other frame, is, are we thinking that this is going to completely grasp us, or can we relate to it loosely? And there's just something about the weight of diagnoses in the clinical field that it's can be hard to get outside of that. And I think hard for clinicians themselves to get free of how they feel a label will inherently limit a person from growth.
Yeah.
So if they give the label, are they themselves giving some kind of sentence to this person in terms of, well, you have this, yeah, I mean, I'll still work with you, you know, but you have this label, remember? Mm-hmm. So like your brain's never going to work as good as anyone else's. And you're just not, probably not going to be as happy as anyone else. And it's like, okay, but we just don't know those things to be true. So we can have the label, or as I would call the experience of depression, or the experience of attentional difficulties, which, you know, is just one of the most challenging things to understand because they show up in pretty much every facet of life. But can we stay open? Can we stay open to where a person can go?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that piece of the conversation you're opening, because I think that is the barrier that I find myself running into in the work that I do. So I don't really like to say that I treat ADHD, because I don't think it needs to be treated. I really don't. I think people with that label need to be supported and empowered, so they can advocate for their needs and get their needs met. And that's truly my goal when I start working with someone in therapy, is to, you know, support their own growth and healing around the pain that has come their way in our society that restricts sort of what they're capable of, is kind of what you're saying, right? Like, the, whether it was labeled or not, some of their behavior was seen as bad, and then they feel bad about themselves or their potential or whatever the case may be, because of the way our society is structured, right? Like, you have to sit still in class and you have to listen to a lecture in order to learn. That's the best way.
Oh, I was terrible at that, always.
Yeah, and I don't know that that's suitable for all humans. I think we all have our own gifts and strengths and our own way of growing. And I wish that our larger society would embrace difference a little bit more, you know, expand what's possible for people and not try to push everyone into the same path. And that's the thing I keep bumping up against in my work with the people I work with in therapy, is like, yeah, if you didn't have to abide by this really like kind of confining way that we operate in the world in order to get money and pay your bills and live life, like you would have so many gifts that you could be able to share with all of us. Like, we need diversity and, you know, we need it in our ecosystem. We need it in our human system. Like, we need difference. We need creativity, we need passion, we need thinking outside the box. Like, we need to do all of those things. We need, there's a place for all of it. And I really feel that. So when I work with someone, I try to free them of some of the trauma or the negative influences of that like restricted life experience that they've gone through that may have hurt how they feel about themselves, right? Or how they are in the world.
And I mean, yeah, that's like so much striking at the heart of my life path, is like, God, I've been living in fear for so long. What would a passion-driven life even feel like or look like? What would a life free of this crippling anxiety? I've been trying to be smart enough and good enough for so long, and like doing pretty well at it in grad school on paper. And then in the room, you know, you could feel the anxiety of this person, like, God, this guy is just like holding on for dear life to this role he's supposed to be playing. And I needed to to climb out of that box so desperately. And I think some people can do it within the system that they're in, potentially.
Yeah.
They may feel free enough within themselves. I was not written in my karmic contract to be able to do that. Needed to sort of tear things down and build back up. But I'll go back to an earlier question. And of course, you only need to share as much as you feel comfortable sharing. But I'm just curious, like, for you, because I know that that time that we were together was a transitional time for you as well. Can you reflect on like where you were feeling constricted and where you felt free and passionate to go when you as you got free in your own way?
Yeah, I'm trying to recall. I think I felt my own sense of anxiety and wanting to please and wanting to, I felt a lot of pulling between like wanting to lean into the system and try to fit into the system and be good and be rewarded, I think actually was a big motivator, be rewarded in the system. Whether that was monetarily or with a label, like a title or, you know, just a recognition or, you know, pleasing the hierarchy that was in place. And I think, you know, of course that harkens back to my own stuff from my own family dynamic.
Of course.
I think I was pregnant while you were, while I was supervising you while you were there. Yeah. And man, what a transformational experience to birth a human.
I can imagine.
Yeah. But I think I felt very, wrapped up in my own anxiety in that time, as it relates to the system that I was in and I was operating in. And then, of course, you know, transitioning into parenthood brings up a lot of other anxieties and worries about, you know, how that will go. But I think it also helped to start to connect me to my body and my emotion and my intuition. I've never thought more about my intuition than when I became a parent. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, I love that. I love anything that connects us to our intuition, because it's a guiding force of my own life. And I feel that there is a very clear relationship to fear programming and intuition in terms of when the fear dominates the body system, the thinking, we don't really have the space or the safety to trust intuitive knowing, or at least that voice is very small. Mm-hmm. And as we begin to expand through the fear conditioning, suddenly we feel guided. Suddenly we feel, oh, I have a sense of what I actually want and what's right for me. But you bring up a really interesting point, which is not unique to psychology. Hierarchies exist in every system, but there, and they also include a system of reward. Like there's always going to be some kind, typically, you know, unless it's like, I don't know, a commune or something. Although even in like a leaderless community, you're going to have drives to strive to play your role. And because as you alluded to, all these systems are a reflection of our own inner system. Mm. You know, if we refer to internal family systems or whatever, parts that exist inside of us is just being mirrored back by every system we participate in. So whatever rewards we're trying to get out of this external system are the same rewards we're just trying to feel inside. Mm-hmm. And we often distort or project them onto other people or other systems and they may never really be enough, even when we do get the title or the role or the accolades that we're seeking. But there is something unique about recognizing when we're in a system and the rewards that we are chasing. Like if we, I feel for myself, if I could get, as I started to get really honest with myself about like what I wanted out of, because at that time, you know, I had seemingly, there's always more to go. There's always more rewards to chase. But like I was at sort of the edge of getting what I had set out to get for, you know, that 5-6 years, whatever, in the program. And my intuition, before I sort of recognized it as such, was always very clear in the sense that I just knew like, this isn't gonna get me what I want. Like I just kind of, I always had a head start on that. Like, yeah, okay, I'm about to get a little more money. I'm about to get a title. You know, I'm about to pass the horrid EPPP. Mm-hmm. And like, I just knew, and I'm like, I feel like this isn't gonna do it for me. Cause I don't know. I don't even know what I'm supposed to feel. Like I'm just chasing this stuff. And that feels so valuable, just to get clear on like, what is it I'm chasing here? And of course, it always comes back to feelings. And that's why feelings are so powerful to manifest, because there's the thing, and then there's just like what the thing gives us. And I just wanted to be good enough. I want to, and you hit it on the head for me, which is to fit in. Like I never fit in. I never fit in. And I wasn't meant to. I just wasn't meant to fit in. So, but I kept trying. I kept trying so hard. And there were, and each new system presented like, well, maybe this one actually is going to be the one. And they were, there were better fits. It was definitely a better fit than the year prior, because that one was pretty low point fit. But then you know, right when you think like, I found it. Yeah, I'm safe within this system. You're like, but am I? Like, it isn't, like, isn't there more within me? Isn't there more, isn't there safety and power and creativity to be discovered within me? Have I just been waiting for permission for the system to tell me that it's okay to be me? Like, am I, I'm just wanting that.
Yeah.
And then you get to a point where it's like, oh, no one's going to tell you, dude. Like, that they're not, I mean, they've told you probably, but was I able to listen, or did I still show up anxious and projecting things onto other people I didn't know as well? And like all of that, it was just all playing out over and over again. And until I feel we can really see that, and sometimes only in hindsight, can we see, like, can we maybe adjust course to like to the seeds of what we're, what is most in alignment for us to create. And it sounds like from all of that transformation and all the roles that were being deconstructed and constructed for you, the seeds of this vision came about. Like, was this was this always an idea in your mind, or did it kind of just arrive?
That's a good question. I mean, I think I come from people who like helping other people and teaching, and I come from people who have made an impact in their community. And so I think I've always had a desire to have an impact, a remarkable impact, I suppose. I think I was hoping that I could have that within a system that would support me and love me unconditionally and, you know, accept me and delight in me, because I was seeking that, like you said, from anywhere I could take it, right? And at some point I started to feel like the system I was in just didn't align with my own values or the way that I wanted to operate, the way that I wanted to show up. It was too anxiety provoking. I was stuck in the system and I couldn't feel authentic. And I had to leave. I felt a strong and like angry conviction about like, I have to get out of here. And I don't know, you know, could deconstruct that, I suppose, but,
And no need for us to delve too deep into our shadows, but I also will just give credit to our anger and to our, because, you know, there's a lot of shame that floats around in our society, and we're very quick to shame, and particularly in, I think, the fields of psychology, where it's all about being compassionate and being empathic. Like, anger sometimes doesn't get the respect it deserves, because anger is sometimes what helps us move out of the situation. Like, you know, anger isn't the purest form of power, but it's can be the distorted, childlike form of the only power we have access to at that time, until we're able to get free enough to let go of that stuff, so we can let our true sort of sensual and creative power emerge. But, you know, for me, you know, for most of my life, anger was the only power I had access to. So anytime I felt constricted in the systems, I would just get reactive and I would get angry and I would feel so much shame about it too. And so, but before I could heal the anger, I had to heal the shame. I had to see that, like, okay, but this is, you know, the anger isn't, it's not all distortion. Like, there's a reason it's coming up, probably because, you know, something feels violated in me. It doesn't mean that other people are violating me all the time, but it means that I haven't yet found the place where I can, you know, clearly be free enough in myself. So sometimes we need that to, sometimes we need to project lots of things onto other people, you know, some of which surely hold truth for them, but ultimately don't really matter. It's more about, can I get out of the place that I don't feel good enough in?
Right.
And there's a quote that I love from a book by Robert Persig, which is Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. And I had this sort of cult following and a lot of mental health issues. But one of his quotes was, the only Zen you find at the top of a mountain is the Zen you carry up there. But you know, what I would add to that is, but sometimes you need to climb the mountain to see what you're carrying.
Right.
So, you know, I needed to, my anger was like, and just to echo, like usually we get to a point in our lives where, you know, in my language, spirit or universe invites us to grow, and the invitations will only get stronger and stronger to the point where you cannot stay. If spirit is like, this ain't for you, like you cannot. And for me, it was sickness. Like I just kept getting sick and sick. I was sick. You know, that's the other part of my journey. That's how the fear was finding its outlet. Outlet was in all the illness for me, and I was so constricted in that until it was like I was nearly, you know. And this was now in COVID times and virtual work, but it was nearly starting. Even when I was in person, I was like, I would start to almost fall asleep sometimes in sessions, which was not really like me because I could be a pretty energetic person, but it was like, something is wrong here. Like I can't stay. And you know, part of my ego wanted to, even as I was leaving, I was like, well, maybe I could do both. And they were like, no, because at that time, the stuff I was, you know, when you start talking about spirit guides with your supervisor, it's like, okay, yeah, I don't think this is going to work out anymore. Yeah, so I just want to honor the things that get us to move because, yes, we can process them later and understand some of the woundedness or whatever the parts are in us that are showing up, but they're showing up to, you know, to get us to launch and to step into that greater power.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so as you did that so just to clarify, is Lotus Bloom all virtual or is it?
It is right now. Yeah. I wrestle with that a bit, but yeah.
Well, so that's interesting because I had this question about boundaries and, you know, maybe you were starting to navigate that at that time. I always was because it's kind of in my nature to reveal myself. Like it's sometimes more than I should, as you have experienced, saying things I probably should have kept inside. But you know, and that carried through like with clients, like people telling me like, no, you need to kind of hold back. And I was like, why? I'll tell this 18-year-old that I've taken LSD. I don't care. Like, I mean, he's asking me, what am I going to hide it? You know, things I just was a little always bit out there. Just something inside me felt that, you know, maybe some would call it attention seeking or whatever. But like for me, it felt like part of my power center, part of my gift was my vulnerability and creating intimacy and also learning how to navigate that appropriately because I did not always. But going virtual creates, there's so many interesting layers to that. I hated it at first. I felt so disconnected, but it also showed me that I didn't necessarily want to be where I was at. And you know, there are boundaries in being more distant, but also like being in your home and like all kinds of things. Potentially you may be in an office space. I'm not sure. But so I'm just curious, like what are some of your, struggles with that element, but also more broadly, like has your relationship to like personal and professional boundaries or how you navigate that, has that changed at all?
Yeah, it's a good question. I like virtual work. I like the flexibility that it affords me with having a family. I like working. I work a lot. And I really enjoy the work that I do. And I think it allows me to be able to like step out of the door of my office, which is in my home, and be with my family right away rather than be stuck in a car for half an hour or, you know, et cetera. So that really aligns with my values of being able to like sort of have a bit of both in my world and have it so accessible. I also find in the clinical work I do that the boundary of the virtual space, I think, allows for more intimacy in some cases, like especially for if I'm working with men, for example, as a woman. I think in a physical office space, talking about their sexual relationships or, you know, their intimate partners in particular comes to mind, but also like just their childhood, their boyhood. And connecting, I do a lot of visualization work around healing trauma, you know, and we go back and think about, you know, what could have been different, what would have felt safe, what would have felt comforting. And so in walking through some of those visualizations with men I've worked with, I've talked about like, if I were there with you as an 8-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 13-year-old, I might put my arm around you. I might try to hold your hand, you know, as a kind of a motherly, sisterly aunt kind of figure. This therapeutic presence that would be comforting physically in some way. And I imagine if we were in a physical office space together, that would feel very different. But I feel free enough to be able to offer that to people. And it seems to be very healing in healing some of their boyhood trauma, which I find comes up a lot. There's a lot of shame around some of these labels, like we've talked about previously, that were manifesting in childhood, but weren't quite understood by the people taking care of my clients. So I think that's been a beautiful thing that's been able to come from the virtual work. I do miss being in person, and sometimes, especially with younger folks, I feel like there's a way to connect that doesn't take as much verbalization. Like the just being together feels a little more strange in a virtual space, but there's so much power in that. And so I miss some of that opportunity.
Yeah. Firstly, let me say, you know, you're doing God's work with men because, oh my God, you think there's a little bit of shame in the masculine identity that plays out on this planet? It is, it's rough. And like, it doesn't matter what gender you are or what you identify as. There's so much trauma on our planet, but you know, oh yeah, men need a lot of, lot of help in that area. So, and yes, the, you know, the safety and distance, right? The safety that you can feel, that a client can feel, there can, it can afford so much. And you know, other sort of, some of my friends I keep in touch with will say that they lament the virtual work or they want to go in, but it has afforded me so much. And, you know, on the surface, it might sound kind of purely self-focused in what it's afforded me in my own life to pick up and drive across the country and to just like explore my life and shape it in the way that I want. And just like you, I pretty much do whatever the hell I want with my life, you know, and sort of merging that with service. And I reveal a lot, and it's sort of a thin line. I don't even always see where the line is, but it, in getting free, I think is something you're also alluding to. Getting free in ourselves allows us to give something that is so special and that transcends, you know, virtual boundaries, in my opinion. That the freedom that I have in myself now, which didn't just come from going virtual, but a consequence of all the ways that I've grown in my life, allows me to show up on the screen more powerfully, more me than I ever could at, you know, and that's sort of developmentally appropriate in some ways in training, but, you know, it's, I feel so, but I also echo your sentiments. Like I still love being in person with people and that will continue to be a part of my life in some ways, and sort of the group stuff I do in person. I don't really see individual people sometimes, but that's more of a energy healing thing that I do. But I also love kids, and that's something that I don't do so much right now. And yeah, the on-screen thing with, I mean, that was almost like the nail in the coffin for me. Was
yeah, that's work brutal. With
all the kids on my caseload at the clinic, like what? I'm just like watching them play video games. Like right. I don't even know what I'm doing. I feel so inadequate. And, you know, and I really loved the kids I got to work with. I still think about some one in particular who mm-hmm. was just, yeah, wild man. I wish him well wherever he is. But yeah, you kind of, there's something that's hard to recreate in the virtual space there. And so I don't know how that will unfold for me. Do you still work with, you know, young people, like really young people?
Not as much, just because of exactly what we're talking about. I would love to. I miss working with little people. I work with 18 months and 2 years and their parents and really little people for a long time, and I miss it. But I think there was a combination of things. You know, moving to the virtual space, I felt like anybody under about the age of 12-ish, just I had a really hard time connecting with over the screen. And so I've transitioned into working with more adolescents and adults at this point. And I do work with a lot of parents. I actually really like working with parents directly because I feel like I can inform them and guide them in how to sort of like be therapists with their own children so that they don't have to, you know, engage in that process if they don't need to. I'm at some points, you know, for some people it's necessary and important, and I get that. But I think if I can empower a mom or a dad or, you know, a parent, an adult to connect with their child, they're going to have a much greater, more consistent impact than coming to see me once a week. And that's something that I did not really believe, or I thought I could have a much greater impact than I think what I really can. Prior to making that transition to working with older people.
Yeah. And, you know, and I have reflected on this before. I actually think I needed a break from kids because it was triggering me a lot. It was bringing up a lot of my own woundedness that I still, my own inner child. Like I didn't, you know, as you could see in my presentation, like, I did not have a lot of access to my own creativity and play. Like I didn't have access to play. Like I worked all the time. I studied all the time. Any system I was a part of, I just put it on a pedestal and I was like, this is what I'm doing. So I don't have to have any fun or whatever. And working with kids, it was like, well, part of it is kind of having fun with them. And I'd be like, what? I don't even know how to do that. I just want to tell them things about themselves. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting. It brought up, I had such deep, loving connections to them. And at the same time, I would find myself, my body acting up. And mm-hmm. and as you, I know, bore firsthand witness to, I would have very strong reactions to parents. I would be, you know, and sort of anger being one of the only forms of power I knew of at that time. Like I would get triggered by parents. I would write them emails that were not appropriate. I would just like, get out of my space. It's like, get out of their space. I would just, and I didn't, yeah, I didn't have access to some of those more divine aspects of compassion and even, although it, you know, if they were a client of mine, I could access it.
Yeah.
But if they were just a parent in my way, I was like, get out. So getting a little space from that was good for me because a lot of the past couple years of my life have been the deepest level of inner child and trauma healing that I've ever been granted with the capacity to do. And much freer and actually much more playful and childlike. And I'm just much more childlike than I ever was as a late 20s person. So
I was actually thinking that when we were exchanging emails about setting this up, I was like, this feels like there's so much energy, like happy energy coming from this email. And when I think about you, like you're giggly and you can laugh things off and you just feel much lighter, I think, than you did. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you for saying that. It's so true. And so many more ways than one. I've just become more of my child self, which, you know, he had it figured out inside, not outside, but there was always the seeds of that I really needed to get in touch with. And for me, I needed to not work so much. Mm-hmm. I just needed to not work so much and to not care about money. And of course, that's, you know, it's easy to say there are so many people on this earth who are living out of survival, living survival-based mm-hmm. programs. But because of that, sometimes when we recognize our own privileges to not necessarily be living survival-based programs, like, we suppress the capacity to, like, not have to do that. And we almost shame mm-hmm. ourselves. It's like, oh, I have so much privilege. I should probably work myself into the ground and be needing to survive just as much as other people. Like, what right do mm-hmm. I have? It's like, you have the capacity that is of service. Like, mm-hmm. don't kill yourself because you right. have the capacity to be playful. And for me, like, honoring that. And that was probably something in myself I needed to get outside of a system to do, because I didn't have the strength at that time to push back against, you know, what I perceived and what I think were also fairly explicit requirements of the system to work in a certain way, which is mm-hmm. not exclusive to that clinic. It's also, it just dominates the field mm-hmm. A bit, I think. Mm-hmm. Fill your caseload and da, 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 oh, you're going to make so much money now. And it's like never enough money. So I don't even understand what the drive is there. Like,
yeah.
Yeah,
it's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up. I was just talking with the student. I do have a student at the practice this year. And she like messaged me yesterday and she was like, oh, I took a lunch break today because you put it in my schedule. And I just wanted you to know it felt really good. And I was hoping I could keep it. And I was sort of a taken back. I was confused. I was like, what do you mean? Was there any, did I ever communicate that you couldn't keep it? And she was like, I don't know. I just wanted to let you know.
I mean, yeah, no, specifically at the clinic we were at, I don't think there was an assigned lunch break. I think it was nope. like, no, yeah. you'll figure that out, but also right. maybe you won't and that'll be okay. And there was like almost this bravado and pride around, like, I was like, I my body could not do it. It
no.
could not
yeah.
do it.
Yeah.
So
I think there's a bit of like corporate culture in there too, right? Like just push through, keep going and like, this idea that we can't give unless we fill our own cup is something that's been powerful for me to learn in parenting as I've evolved as a parent, but also as a practitioner, is so true. Like I got to sleep and I got to eat and I got to move my body. And if those things don't happen, like it's just not happening. Things aren't happening.
Yeah. And you know, at that time, you know, at the clinic, but also just like the system of grad school, you know, mm-hmm. all my peers would like, and I did this too, but others even more extreme, like grad school was the excuse to just like treat yourself terribly. Mm-hmm. Like, well, I'm in grad school, so I stayed up all night, like four nights, like what? Like, I don't get... Is that why? Is that what we're supposed to? Is it like meeting some romantic vision of being a student where like you're just burnt out all the time? And everyone, you could go into a grad school and just ask people how they are. And there's, you just get these like sardonic like looks of like, well, I'm a grad student. So how do you think I am? Like terrible. Mm-hmm. It's like, gosh, this is rough. Like I don't, mm-hmm. on some level, I think we're all, We're responding to the invitation to work really hard, which is often made explicit, but then internalizing it in our own way, which, you know, for me, my own like, you know, masculine identity, like, you know, I could be vulnerable, but in other ways, I really wanted to show up and prove myself. So it was super hard for me to get playful. And Spirit kind of invited that in by really just taking a lot of things away from me. Like when I left the clinic and just started doing my own thing, like it's not like people came rushing in. I mean, I didn't even know what I was doing, and I was talking about things that were so bizarre. It's not like people were lining up at the door. So I kind of, and people would say to me like, well, you could always go back, but a part of me was like, no, I can't. Mm-hmm. So in that time and space, I sort of had to learn like what rest looked like. And, you know, the I could take solace in the fact that my body was healing for like the first time in my life, like in so many different ways. And from that healing, like new inspiration, new creativity, that like honoring my nature, which was not to create by grinding every day, but actually through ebb and flow, waiting for inspiration. Mm-hmm. Like for me, just like waiting to be inspired to do something was like just this amazing way of sort of flowing with life in a different way than just like waiting for a deadline or waiting for someone to tell me what I needed to do and always resenting it on some level.
Mm-hmm.
That changed everything. And so possibly if it's through the invitation of how my life is unfolding, maybe I'll find my way back to kids and I'll be able to bring something in myself that was hidden and that wasn't able to fully present itself. Because I think I would bring a whole, I mean, I was already making a mess of other clinicians' rooms with sand and stuff, but we could do some play now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was important. All that was important.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at the time and want to give you some time to transition effectively to to what you got going on after this. So I guess I'll just pose a general question around if there's anything else you'd like to add.
Oh my, I think I could talk for days about these topics. I think one thing you're bringing up at the end here brings to mind just the struggle of trying to support people who are maybe trying to find that flow and that rhythm and maybe operate, you know, a lot of people in the neurodivergent brain space I work in probably operate better in a flow state than in sort of an ebb and flow than they do in a more linear fashion with the restrictions of the culture we live in. And so it's just hard to find balance in that. It's hard to find balance for them to be able to show up and do what they need to do to survive, but also be true to who they are. And so I find myself wishing that our larger culture would be more open to this difference, right? And to different ways of learning and being and doing our jobs and showing up and things like that. And I think that's true of training and supervision as well. I think there's some evolution happening with this next generation, but of practitioners that are kind of growing up and coming out of graduate school and saying like, this isn't okay. And I find a lot of pride in the fact that, like, you know, I've scheduled breaks in the day for my clinicians and my student, and I do it myself too. And I discuss with them, like, what do you do during a break to rejuvenate yourself and not, you know, keep, you know, catch up on your notes,
right?
But like, how do you actually take a break? What does that look like? And how is it rejuvenating? How is it grounding? What do you need during that time? And I find that I operate in a way that feels much more sustainable when I have that time. I think there are moments where I have to push myself because I'm operating a business and I have obligations and I want to keep my promises to people. But yeah, I hope that model can change. I hope that there's some evolution in the way that we look at, you know, I want my clinicians to be able to show up and do good work. And so I have to support them having the space to do that, you know. So the way I've structured things, I think, looks a little different, but, you know, the pay structure, the schedule, the benefits, it's a little bit more giving, I think, than people have been in the past. And I'm really proud of that. And I hope it sort of models something for other people that it's possible, to do this in a new way and have it be successful.
I love that. I love that. And I trust the universe that you are aligned in that and that you will be rewarded tenfold for setting a heart-based model to support development. And, you know, and at the same time, as you express, having to watch people find themselves and go through it because we can't just give it to them.
Mm-hmm.
They do need to bump up against their own restrictions and recognize where they're stuck. And of course, there are all these things that play a role, but as you alluded to, like, we need to learn how to rest. Like, mm-hmm. at some point in our life, it's natural, But then it gets really conditioned away where we don't, because again, that same question of that like hypothetical, like asking a grad school student like, oh yeah, what did you do when you finished that paper? They're like, I don't know, just like stared at my phone for like 6 hours, and,
right.
like, and, you know, or just like, or slept. And like the thing about that is like sleep is important, but sometimes what would happen is if our life was only work and sleep, then sleep was the only mechanism we went to rest, and we didn't know how to actively rest with awakened consciousness. So it was like, oh, I just slept through the, I caught up on sleep is like a popular thing. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know, maybe that's a thing, but probably also learning how to actively use conscious waking time restfully is important. So that's like how our life can feel creative and because expressing creatively can be restorative or whatever. But yeah, all those things. Beautiful. Well, this has been really gratifying for me to explore all these things with you and to revisit some of these stages in my own life that are really not that far away, but feel like lifetimes away. And I do feel that collectively things are changing. And like for me, like if I have more than three clients, three meetings in a day, I'm like, wow, busy day today.
Like, yeah.
Legit. And that's me. That's not necessarily for everyone, but it's working for me right now. And so I'm grateful for that. But okay, so last thing I'll just say is where people can find you if you'd like them to.
Yeah. You can go to the website, lotusbloompsychology.com. That's a good place to land and look around. I also have some social media that I think is fun. I like to be creative, and for
love
me
it.
Right now, that's like one outlet. I mean, it's not too spicy and exotic, but it's just fun and it's educational. And so on Instagram, I'm at Cup of ADHD, all one phrase. So
I love that. Okay, I'll definitely put that in the show notes and I'll have to check it out myself.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much for doing this, Ashley. This has been a true honor and privilege for me to get to spend this time with you again.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks for listening. If you like the episode and would like to support the podcast, please subscribe and leave a review anywhere you listen. And if you'd like to connect further, feel free to reach out on Instagram, my website, or my Patreon page at patreon.com/DrDanielAtkins, where for $5 a month, you can gain access to all sorts of exclusive benefits and offerings for the Be the Vessel community. This includes live channeled events, a new healing series podcast, and more. Until then, may you be the light, the frequency, and the vessel for your highest vision.